This is Radio Influence. Podcasting redefined.
Why, Crusher, it's good to see you.
Crush Performance with the Crusher, Jeff Crushell. Get in on the talent grid and follow him on Twitter at Jeff Crush. Now, here he is, the Crusher.
And welcome to Crush Performance, everybody. Jeff Crushell here. The con man is behind the glass keeping us on track, and we're your weekly source for performance information. If you want to get in touch with us, go to our website, crushperformance.com. On Twitter, it's at Jeff Crush. And if you're on Facebook, go to our page. It's Crush Performance. Today is our second episode in our special series, Sport Under Fire, our look into the impact of crime and corruption inside of sport. Two of my top stories from 2017 were, of course, the Russian doping scandal and the FBI investigation into corruption and fraud in college basketball. So I wanted to dig a little deeper, find out what's going on in today's sporting landscape, and what are the major threats to the integrity of sport and the spirit of fair play. We kicked the series off last week with Declan Hill. Declan is a journalist, academic, consultant, and author of two incredible books, The Insider's Guide to Match Fixing in Football and The Fixed, Soccer and Organized Crime. Now, Declan's been on the show before. We've spoken to him, and I thought it would be a perfect way to set the tone for the series and get a really good idea of what's going on in terms of sport, corruption, and crime. And boy, did we ever hit the mark. The conversation last week with Declan was not only alarming, it was interesting and incredibly informative. Declan really highlighted some of the major issues that sport is facing right now and how serious it is. And not only that, how deep it really goes. And anytime somebody like Declan asks to stop the interview, which he did last week, you do it. So we did. And Declan went on to talk about the Canadian Soccer League and how match fixing and corruption is as bad in Canadian soccer as anywhere in the world. In fact, he went on to say that there are bookmakers around the world that won't take action on the Canadian Soccer League because it's so corrupt. This is right in our backyard, and I thought it was absolutely fascinating. We're going to look into that a little bit more for sure as we move along. But it was a dynamite kickoff to our series. We also spoke with Dale Sheehan, the director of the Special Investigations Unit for the International Center for Sport Security, about some of the things they're seeing globally and some of the issues they're facing, and it really paralleled with everything Declan was saying. And among all the things Dale spoke to us about, he also mentioned the Canadian Soccer League as one of the major concerns when it comes to organized crime, money laundering, and match fixing in sports. So a very good conversation there as well. So sport is under fire, and that is why we put this series together. We wanted to raise awareness and just to get the word out there. Listen, we really believe that if you want to solve a problem, you need to clearly define the problem. And unfortunately, I don't think we really know what's going on the inside, but there are experts that do. And that's what our series Sport Under Fire is all about, raising awareness and finding out really what's going on behind the scenes so we can make the proper adjustments moving forward. And today is no exception. Again, one of my top stories from last year was the Russian doping scandal. It's still fascinating to me. In fact, it's unbelievable that in this day and age, a country would have the tenacity to actually organize and run a very sophisticated system for doping their athletes. Today, we get an inside look at the timeline that broke this whole story wide open and what really went on behind the scenes that allowed the IOC to levy the sanctions that banned the Russian athletes from international competition. Coming up after the break, we will talk with Gunter Younger, who was one of the investigators in the McLaren report, the first one and the second one. This was the official investigation that brought together the evidence for the IOC so they could understand what went on and decide what to do with that information. He has since then assumed the role of the Director of Intelligence and Investigations for the World Anti-Doping Agency, a very, very important role as it becomes critically important to not only gather intelligence, but to put it together in a way that will stand up in the court of law, making sure the evidence is not only gathered properly, but presented properly as well. We're going to try to get an understanding of the degree to which sport's been compromised by organized crime and what Gunter feels we need to do to combat the issues surrounding the corruption. And in his previous role with German intelligence, he was in charge of all cybercrime matters. So we're going to ask Gunter about the dark web. Is it real? How real is it? And is the dark web one of the most dangerous weapons law enforcement now faces? We'll find out. And later in the show, we will talk with Mr. Richard Pound, the former president of the World Anti-Doping Agency and the lead investigator in the initial probe into the Russian doping scandal. We're going to get a very special inside look into the investigation and the risks the original whistleblowers took to bring this story to the outside world. It's going to sound like some kind of Hollywood movie script, but it's all too real. Find out what it's all about right after this on Crush Performance as our special series, Sport Under Fire, continues.
Find out what it takes to be a top performer. Get the Crush blog, podcast, and newsletter at crushperformance.com. Now, back to the show.
All right, everybody. Welcome back to Crush Performance. Jeff Crochel here. The con man is behind the glass, keeping us on track. And we're your weekly source for performance information. Listen, if you have questions, comments, or smart remarks, get to us. CrushPerformance.com is the website. You can follow me on Twitter. It's at Jeff Crush. And on Facebook, go to Crush Performance. Today, we carry on with our special investigative report, Sport Under Fire, looking at corruption in sport. And today, a very special episode in the series, as I wanted to get into one of the top stories for me in 2017, the Russian doping scandal. How is it possible that a state-run, state-organized, systematic, well-thought-out doping program exists in today's sporting landscape? It's still fascinating to me because it's so wrong on so many levels. And to have the tenacity to organize and run this, I just wanted to know who spearheaded this, who's organizing this, and how, with all the controls that the world sporting organizations are trying to put in place to get a handle on doping and protect the integrity of sport, how is it possible that a state-run doping program even exists? It's alarming to me on absolutely every level and still fascinating. And that's why I wanted to make a concerted effort to take a serious look at this particular story as we move into 2018 and the next Winter Olympics. Listen, it's not that these programs can't happen. I get that. It's not that hard to run a doping program. But the tenacity to actually organize it and run it, well, that's beyond belief to me. So in today's show, we're going to get into how it actually all went down. They got caught with their hand in the proverbial cookie jar. But how did it happen? How was the IOC and WADA tipped off? How did they go about gathering the information they needed inside of Russia? Who were the whistleblowers that actually gave them the information they needed to run the investigation and build their case against Russia that led to their banning of international sports? And not only that, how far did it actually go? The original investigation was sort of focused on track and field only, but it blew up to 30 other sports and over 1,000 athletes to date. We don't know where it's going to go moving forward. But I wanted to find out how it all went down and what was going on behind the scenes. Again, if we're going to solve a problem, we have to really define the problem. And right now, I think the biggest question here is, how did it actually happen? I think the motivations are fairly clear. I think we know why Russia did it. I mean, sport's an important part of their culture, and winning is incredibly important. But winning at all costs, well, that's what the World Anti-Doping Agency was designed for. To set, enforce, and maintain some standards of integrity that might lead to fair play. Listen, we know why athletes go to the dark side, because they don't know what else to do. But that's not the case here. This is a state-run program, and from what we understand coming out of the McLaren investigations and the initial investigation done by Dick Pound, who we'll talk to later in the show, this was like forced programming. The athletes had no choice but to go through this program or lose their status as a national athlete. And for the whistleblowers, what kind of risks did they take to bring this whole thing to light? I mean, they were smuggled out of their home country for their own safety. What kind of dangers were they in? Well, our conversation with Mr. Pound later in the show will shed some light on that. But in order to build the case that led to the banning of an entire country's sporting organization. That's a big deal. And WADA had to go the distance in order to get this information together so the IOC could act. And that took the efforts of some very, very important and critical and detailed investigative work. And one of the lead investigators in this entire scenario was Gunter Younger. Gunter assumed the role of the Director of Intelligence and Investigations for the World Anti-Doping Agency in June of 2016. And he joins us right now. Gunter, thanks for joining us today.
You're welcome. Thank you, Jeff.
You were previously the head of the cybercrime division at the Bavarian Landesstrafanwalt. I'm not sure if I pronounced that. My German is not so great, but loosely translated, that's a national criminal police in Germany. Talk to us about your transition going from the Bavarian criminal police office to WADA. A really, really interesting transition there. And your involvement, of course, in the Russian doping investigation has been a critical role in breaking that story wide open.
Yeah, it started more or less in 2009, because in 2009 I was the head of the drug section at Interpol, and WADA at that time approached Interpol in order to enhance the cooperation between law enforcement and WADA, and I was the contact point, and I met first time with Olivier Nigli. And we were discussing what we as law enforcement could do for WADA. And we had some interesting project at that time. And when I came back to the Bavarian police, I was called in December 2014 by WADA whether I would be ready to investigate into the Russian allegations. And as I like international investigations, and my boss was at the first moment not so happy, but then he let me go. So this is why I was announced as a member of the independent commission.
Great. And that commission broke that story wide open, Gunter, which what I believe is one of the more alarming stories in recent sport history. That initial investigation led to the first McLaren report, which then led to the second McLaren report. And we're still sifting through all the information there. But I think it just really let us understand how deep I guess the corruption in sport runs. And again, yeah, I guess we can't be too loose in how we describe corruption, but in 2014, it was interesting to hear Mr. Howman make the statement that over 25% of world sport is influenced by organized crime. And as you've explained earlier, we have to be very careful in how we describe organized crime. But in coming from the cyber division of the Bavarian Criminal Police Office to this big world of the World Anti-Doping Agency. Gunter, where do you think we're at in sort of getting a stranglehold on controlling all this corruption in sport?
I think one big pillar for fighting against corruption is to establish good relationship to law enforcement. Especially law enforcement worldwide, they suffer from the fact that they always have to send rocketry letters to other countries. It's very difficult to get into other countries, so you have to cooperate with them. And I think this is something that WADA can offer, because we have no borders. We have worldwide possibilities to interview and to get evidence. And as we have proven with the first investigation into the IAF and with the French authority, it's an excellent method to complement each other. So the law enforcement was very happy with our investigation, because the results were based on law enforcement experience. And Madame Ouellette from the French authority, from the prosecution office, she said, at the end of this report, you can clearly see that there was law enforcement involved, and which helps us immediately to follow up all the allegations. And I think this is a key element that WADA and my team will do that, because most of my team have law enforcement background, will establish bridges to law enforcement, that sport is more in the focus of law enforcement, because it's not the highest priority, first. And second, if you just see one doper, then of course it might be not worth for law enforcement But as for drug addicts as well, you start always with one who uses drugs, and then you climb up the ladder to the highest one, and then suddenly you are facing criminal networks. And then, of course, it's of interest for law enforcement. And secondly, what is as well very important and what we're going to focus as well in the future is the internet, is dark web. It's the most increasing crime area of the world, and every, you know, organized crime group, I think at the moment, will shift more and more to this area. And for our area is sports, is the PEDs, so performance enhancing drugs, is very common to deliver that through the internet, and organized crime groups or criminal network groups can use the same periphery than using for drugs. And if you just go into and Google performance enhancing drugs, and you see how many companies or illicit drug laboratories offer that. And this is why we need to focus on that as well, because this is something that not only the will harm the athletes, but also the private sector.
We're talking with Gunter Junger, who is the Director of Intelligence and Investigations for the World Anti-Doping Agency. Gunter, it seems as organized crime gets more sophisticated, we also have to be more sophisticated in how we approach fighting this crime. It's interesting because, you know, we throw around words like doping and match fixing, gambling, money laundering, and even human trafficking, all in relation to sport. But when you talk about these really intricate networks, the internet must make this a very, very difficult task to get under control. And coming from the cyber division in Germany, I'm sure you have an understanding of this. Where are we at in terms, just when we think we're getting ahead or catching up to the dark side of sport, the cyber division comes in, and that must be a whole new Pandora's box of issues for you guys.
Yeah, I fully agree with you, Jeff. And especially the internet is one of the most complex area because it has no borders. So it's easy to establish servers worldwide. And when you investigate that, you have to go into the country to physically see servers or ask someone to look into it. I think it's most of the challenging area. And according to my knowledge, it's very well known and from law enforcement worldwide. And recent success stories into the dark web, I can refer to some stories, investigations in Germany, where they could identify people who sold weapons. We are getting better, and I think we have to cooperate and for sure to keep yourself updated in this area, because it will not stop, it will increase in the future.
Yeah, no, a fascinating conversation today, Gunter. It's really interesting to hear how networked this is becoming inside of a sport. And I guess, you know, wherever there's the money that's involved, that we see that's involved in sport, wherever there's that kind of money involved, there's going to be crime. And that's, I think, sort of a common theme across the board. But there's a lot of money to be had in sport, not just in terms of the big events like the Olympics, but professional sport, organized sport, the soccer leagues, the professional leagues around the world. But then on the dark side, there's also a really, really big business. And in 2014, it was said that over $140 billion was being laundered through sport and sport betting, and the gambling side is a big influence on the corruption in sport, isn't it?
We have one thing: when you start investigation, then you have one thing, especially in all type of crimes, follow the money.
Aha.
You follow the money, you find the right person.
Right. Right. So, Gunter, in your transition into the World Anti-Doping Agency, this is a really bold move and a big move and an important move for the World Anti-Doping Agency, as you mentioned, to have sort of this police approach to the investigations and the intelligence that they're gathering to help fight the dark side of sport. Just in your opinion, how has the first year and a bit been for you? I mean, this is obviously a very interesting world to be involved in. And for all of us who are, you know, standing behind upholding the integrity of sport, we're really interested in how this is going to influence our fight against the dark side.
So after 1 year, I can really say that first, I like it because it's really a completely different area that I've been so far. Second, working within WADA is really good because I'm, as an independent investigation body, I can more or less follow up every case that I would like to. This is a very good condition for my team. I have a very good team with law enforcement background, and they say some cases that we are running at the moment, you wait a long time to do that at the police service. We have already good relationship to some law enforcement. So I think there's a lot of potential in the future. We are at the beginning. We just have sometimes we need to address that. Then we need to be a bit patient because we need to set up new policies and we need to learn how sport works. But I'm quite sure that the investigation department will have a great future and will help to clean sport. And in this respect, I'm very happy to contribute my knowledge into this area.
Well, thank you so much, Gunther. Appreciate your time today and this fantastic conversation. And we look forward to staying in touch with you as we all push sport in the right direction here.
Always welcome, Jeff. Thank you very much for your time.
And there you have it, a fantastic discussion with Gunther Younger, who, again, is the Director of Intelligence and Investigations for the World Anti-Doping Agency. How about that? The dark web. It's real. It's not just some TV science fiction type stuff. It's all too real. And one of the most dangerous tools criminal networks, mafia, and organized crime have at their disposal. And unless law enforcement can get a handle on this thing, it's really tipping the scales in favor of crime. Just a real fantastic and eye-opening discussion with Gunther. And if you want to listen to this interview again, go to our website, punch the podcasts, and you can download it. We're basically an every platform possible, iTunes, Apple Podcast, Stitcher, Google Play, you name it, we're on it. So you can listen to it again or spread it around if you'd like. Coming up after the break, how on earth did the Russians even begin to think they could get away with a state-run doping program? And maybe even more so, when it comes to the investigation that blew it wide open, how did it start? Well, right after the break, we will talk with Richard Pound, the head of the independent commission who investigated the allegations of doping in Russia. An investigation that was brought to the world's attention by whistleblowers. Just how dangerous was it for those people? You're not going to believe it. Stick around. That's coming up right after this on the Crush Performance Special Investigative Report, Sport Under Fire.
If you have any performance questions, comments, or smart remarks, text Crusher at 101260 and follow him on Twitter at Jeff Crush. Now, here he is, the Crusher.
And welcome back to Crush Performance and our special investigative report, Sport Under Fire, as we look at corruption in sport. Today, we're focusing on one of the top storylines for me from 2017 and 2016, for that matter, the Russian doping scandal. Just coming off a fantastic conversation with Gunther Younger, who was one of the lead investigators that got to the bottom of exactly what was going on in Russia at the time of this big doping scandal. But before any of that was even possible, the investigation had to begin. Where did it begin? Well, it started with some whistleblowers, some people inside of Russia who took incredible risks to get this story to the outside world. And it was their secret and very dangerous gathering of information that provided enough evidence to launch the investigation that blew the lid off this whole thing, that turned out to be a very sophisticated state-run doping program. And to give us a step-by-step timeline of how this whole thing unraveled, we're joined now by Dick Pound, former president of the World Anti-Doping Agency and head of the independent commission that first investigated the Russian doping scandal. Mr. Pound, thanks for joining us today.
Pleasure.
I'd like to start this off by just taking a moment to thank you for all your longstanding work and your commitment to the pursuit of fair play and upholding the integrity of sport. It seems to be a life's work for you, and I just want to thank you so much for all your efforts.
Well, thank you very much. That's very kind.
Well, since your time as president of the World Anti-Doping Agency, which you helped found, by the way, in your view, how have we been doing since you first got involved? And as we approach this new era of sport performance, I suppose.
Well, I'd say we've got a system in place now that actually is pretty robust and can deal, you know, structurally with all of the issues we find. The real difficulty is there are a lot of people out there that don't really want that system to work. And I identify in particular, the international sports federations, but it's clear from what's happened with Russia that it's not limited to sport bodies, but actually can extend and does extend to government involvement.
So the corruption in sport runs deep, and it's fascinating to me, Mr. Pound, that this is actually happening in today's age. And maybe, you know, we're sitting up here on our island in Canada, you know, where we really are true to upholding the integrity of sport, though we do have our issues internally as well. But to see this leak into the government, this is just astounding to me. So we have the national sporting federations, the Olympic type of sports, we have the professional organizations, and then we have the government being involved. This is a real three-pronged devil we're dealing with.
Yeah, well, that's the problem. And the difficulty is that the sports authorities have no jurisdiction over what governments do. Much as you'd like to be able to change Russia and the way its government works, there's no direct way of doing that. The only way you can get at them is somewhat indirectly by suspending, as the IOC has done, their National Olympic Committee, and only allowing athletes who can demonstrate on a case-by-case basis that they are clean participate in these events.
We are talking with Richard Pound, former president of the World Anti-Doping Agency and lead investigator in the McLaren report, which was investigating the doping allegations in Russia. Well, let's go to this Russian story and maybe to the start of your involvement. We go back through the timeline, and I think this is one of the biggest stories in recent sport history. And also, you're so right, the shot across the bow that's been made here, suspending the Russian Federation from competition. And now we're seeing it go deeper. But to go back to the very start, Mr. Pound, how did you get involved? What was the lead up to your involvement and the start of the investigation?
The lead up was a couple of whistleblowers from within Russia who contacted WADA, the World Anti-Doping Agency, and said, look, we think that this is going on, and you know, what can you do about it? WADA said, well, look, we're kind of in a bit of a difficult position because we don't actually have the power to do investigations. So what we would suggest is that you go to there's a very well-known investigative reporter on German television by the name of Heiko Seppelt. Talk to him, and he'll tell you what evidence you would need in order, you know, to make the story credible and have legs. So they spent a couple of years on and off talking with him and put it all together. And Seppel, when he sort of stepped back, he said, you know, I can't put this on German television while you're still in Russia because your physical safety would be compromised. So they smuggled them out of Russia and hid them somewhere in Europe and then ran this program, which was a real bombshell. And that led to an investigation that I chaired on behalf of WADA. It was limited only to Russia and only to the sport of track and field at that point. So we did a report, and as a result of which the Russian Athletics Federation was suspended, and their lab was disaccredited, and all sorts of things like that. And so we're proceeding along that way, knowing that it probably extended further than just track and field. In fact, it was throughout the whole system. And then there was another whistleblower, a fellow called Grigory Rodchenkov, who was the director of the Moscow lab and so forth, and very knowledgeable about doping and what was going on. He suddenly looked over his shoulders and found that his two predecessors had died mysteriously of heart attacks about 2 weeks apart. And he thought, you know, maybe I'm the next guy because I know about what was going on. So he was smuggled out of Russia and then... made a very public statement that was picked up by the New York Times, and that led to Richard McLaren's investigation. And I wasn't involved in that one because it was thought that the IOC might have to do something depending on the outcome of the investigation. And they didn't want, you know, the complaint to be, oh, well, you know, here's Pound, who's a member of the IOC, and, you know, he's an investigator and a judge, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
But McLaren did a fabulous job in an astonishingly short time and disclosed a system that started with the government and spread throughout all of the sports and published a report that was a real bombshell. And unfortunately, the IOC fumbled the ball and said that his findings, and McLaren's one of the finest, best-known investigators in sport matters in the world, said no, they were just allegations. They weren't findings, and they essentially duplicated all his work. Finally, coming up with a report in I think it was November of last year, confirming exactly what McLaren had said. That led to the suspension of the Russian National Olympic Committee. But if you kept the headline looked good, if you kept reading, you found out that it didn't really make much of a difference, because their athletes are going to be able to compete as guests of the IOC. But it now sounds like the Russian National Olympic Committee will pay a modest fine in the circumstances and be allowed to participate in the closing ceremony. So there's really been no significant price extracted by the IOC in this, and it's a very disappointing outcome to date.
Yeah, it is a disappointing outcome. We're talking with Mr. Richard Pound, former president of the World Anti-Doping Agency and lead investigator for the initial investigation into the Russian doping scandal. Mr. Pound, going back to your initial statements on the whistleblowers, this sounds like a Hollywood script. This can't be possible. Two people close to the testing lab in Russia having heart attacks 2 weeks apart, suspicion there, of course, and then the lead lab director leaves Russia and is now, in hiding. And this just sounds like a movie script, for crying out loud. Unfortunately, this is all too real, isn't it?
I'm afraid it is. It kind of makes John le Carré novels look like kid stuff.
It sure does. So can I ask you this, Mr. Pound, with everything that's in place right now, and you've been involved in this, as long as anybody in the industry right now, I'm not going to lie to you, and maybe this is a little show of my ignorance, maybe innocence, I'm not sure, but I really have a hard time believing that this happened the way it did in today's day and age, where the World Anti-Doping Agency, coming out of Rio, has really been re-energized with support and, I guess, maybe a little more power based on the international sporting organizations. To see this going on, I was truly, truly alarmed. What was your initial response when you started really digging into this?
Well, it was all of us in our part of the world, in quotation marks, know that there's something going on in Russia, but you've never been able to come up with the hard evidence of it. And we were able to get hard evidence of, documents, whistleblowers, lab results, the techniques that were used to swap samples and all that sort of stuff. And you think, we knew something was going on. We didn't realize it was quite as blatant and quite as comprehensive as it's turned out to be. But, you're better off knowing about it. The real difficulty, it seems to be political, in the sense that Russia is a very big, aggressive, important sport country. If this had been Canada where all this had happened, or Guatemala, what would have happened and how quickly it would have happened. Mm-hmm. The IOC seems to be having trouble coming to grips with the fact that it's Russia. And I think that, you just have to say, look, big or small, these are the rules. You've accepted these rules, and you now have to play by them. And if you're not willing to do so, don't let the door hit your bum on the way out.
Yeah. Yeah, and I agree with you there. It's interesting to see, as you mentioned, you guys were focusing initially on athletics, but this turned out to be 1,000 athletes in over 30 sports. And now we hear about FIFA getting involved. We hear the KHL getting involved on the periphery. But I was really interested to see the response of the IAAF and Lamine Diak's initial responses, but then Mr. Coe stepping in and really rallying the troops there. What were your impressions with the IAAF?
Well, the impression based on the evidence is clearly that it was corrupted. The inner circle was very corrupt. And, you know, DIAC's term expired just about the time that all of this stuff was hitting the fan. And Seb Coe, I think, was the right choice for the IAAF to become the president, and he stepped in, and he's been firm about dealing with these issues. He set up an integrity unit that is pretty much at arm's length from the management of the sport, and I think he's done exactly the right thing. I wish some of these other federations, notably FIFA, but you've now got the International Luge Federation refusing to follow decisions of the IOC regarding the cheating at Sochi. So there are a lot of these individual sports federations that seem to be pretty compromised or conflicted, at least, with respect to Russia.
We're talking with Mr. Richard Pound, former president of the World Anti-Doping Agency and the initial investigator into the Russian doping scandal. Mr. Pound, if we look at where we're at today, sort of in the aftermath, the first McLaren report was sort of in a real-time crunch to get sort of set for Rio. They were really restricted in their time, but the initial findings from that initial McLaren report were very damning to Russia. Since there's been a second report, which has really dug deep into the evidence that they've found, I wanted to get your comments on this, the whistleblowers, because this is a very, very powerful tool, I think, for organizations around the world. And I think if there's anything to come out of that side of it, there might be a little bit of hope that these people inside of Russia really, really did risk it all by blowing the whistle on this. And now they're of course, protected. But the whistleblower movement is going to be a real powerful tool moving forward, don't you think?
I think so, and one of the things that WADA is doing, and other groups are calling for it, is to make it possible for whistleblowers to provide confidential information and not have it tied back to them. So it's a big deal. You can see how powerful the tool is by the Russian reaction. I mean, the Russian reaction is they want. You know, the whistleblowers, they're traitors, and a lot of the senior leadership, especially the Olympic leadership, has been suggesting that they should be killed. That's something that simply has to stop.
Right.
That's not an acceptable approach to whistleblowing. So it's in its early stages of getting developed, but it's far better to have information coming from people who know what's actually going on than to take your chances, with urine and blood samples, because while testing is important, in many respects, you've got to be lucky. You've got to find the right athletes at the right time when they're in the middle of a doping program in order to catch them.
Well, in reading the evidence disclosure package, which is available online, you can read through the thousands and thousands of documents you accumulated and that were accumulated during both McLaren reports. It is a fascinating read. I've perused it the best I can, and I'm still absolutely dumbfounded in how this went on. This was an intentional, very well thought out, sophisticated cheating system. And the one thing that really fascinated me was, just when WADA thinks it has a pretty bulletproof system for protecting a urine sample and testing samples, somebody comes up with a system that can, maybe break through the security part of it. And to hear that they were opening the samples and contaminating them with salt and coffee and doing all these things to throw it off and changing the samples was really alarming to me as well. And again, I don't know how we break through that to the next level, but to really get into how this actually went down was just unbelievable to me. Again, maybe perhaps another Hollywood movie script.
I think it'll be a high tech one now, because some of the stuff that was going on in the laboratory, we've been very fortunate that another whistleblower has provided a sort of an access tool so that you can actually get in and see. A sample comes in, it looks like it's going to be positive. There's a save order coming from the Deputy Minister of Sport, so that positive sample is reported as a negative sample, and therefore nothing is done about it. Well, now we know who's samples were affected by that, and we're going through them. You have to go through them one at a time, but as you can see from the Oswald Commission, you know, we're up to something like 40 or 50 cases, mm-hmm. All of which have been tampering with the actual sample, you know, substitution of it, or tampering in the sense of turning a positive test in the laboratory system into a negative test. So unfortunately, the perpetrators always have the initial advantage, but now that we know what was done and how it was done, we can follow every single case through the records now.
Won't it be nice if we ever get one step ahead? One step ahead, it just seems to be a big catch-up game. We're talking with Mr. Richard Pound, former Olympic Canadian swimmer, prominent, he served as the Secretary of Canadian Olympic Committee. He was the former president of the World Anti-Doping Agency, one of its founders. And in 2005, Time Magazine featured you as one of the 100 most influential people in the world, Mr. Pound. Sport has been a major part of your life. You've been one of the leaders in upholding the integrity of sport. And you continue that fight even today. Where are we at right now, Mr. Pound, in the big picture? We're obviously learning from the Russian incident. WADA has really made some major moves forward. In the next 5 to 10 years, do you see us getting ahead a little bit, or what are your impressions at this point in time?
I think we're getting to what you might call a tipping point. I mean, sport has either got to get its hands on this and control it, or people are going to stop watching it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, nobody wants to watch fixed matches and fixed events. And so until you can get that that kind of contamination out of sport, I think sport is very much at risk. And, you know, you're going to get spectators lose interest. If that happens, sponsors will lose interest. If that happens, broadcasters will lose interest. If you have to become a chemical stockpile in order to be successful at sport, parents are going to say to the kids, listen, kids, let's not do that. Let's do something else. And the whole system could implode very quickly, and then these things can happen very quickly once the momentum starts.
Are we heading in the right direction?
Well, I think there's a better and more organized push now. People who have looked at the situation and see the dangers, both health and ethical and even economic, if you want to be crass about it, are saying, you know, we've got to get this under control. And you know, nobody's obliged to participate in the Olympics or in international sport. But here's the deal. If these are the rules, you know, when you show up at the starting line, you're making an affirmation that you're in compliance with those rules. If you don't like the rules, you don't have to participate. And, you know, go ahead. If you want to have a sport that's filled with doped athletes, start your own organization. But don't spoil the one that's out here now.
Yep. Amen, Mr. Pound. Well, again, thank you so much for your time today. Great insights. And again, I just have to thank you for all your work, of course, well before this investigation, but leading into the Russian scandal and all the work that you'll be doing here as we sort of work through the dust and the after debris, I suppose.
Hey, well, thank you very much.
Okay, everybody. Well, wow. I'm not sure if you're as alarmed as I am, but that was a serious insider look at the initial investigation that blew open the Russian doping scandal. Correct me if I'm wrong here, but doesn't this sound like some kind of a movie script? It's almost surreal. The dangers that are involved here, all in the name of trying to protect fair play and the integrity of sport. I mean, I think you heard the same thing I heard. The director of the Russian lab, fearing for his well-being, wanted to get out of town because his two predecessors mysteriously died of heart attacks 2 weeks apart, and he felt that he was going to be next. It's incredible. And it was also interesting to hear Mr. Pound's opinion on the IOC action. He didn't think the IOC did enough. He thinks they dropped the ball, not punishing them the way they should have. It eventually turned out to be a global ban of Russian athletes, at least the ones who were caught up in the doping program, but we're still sifting through the information. And I think we'll learn more as the investigation continues and after this next Winter Olympics. Well, wow, this is everything and more I hoped our Sport Under Fire investigation would be. If you want to listen to our conversation with Mr. Pound again, you can. I sure do. You can go to our website, click on the podcast button, and get this interview and the entire series and all of our archive shows there as well. And share this one as we try to shed light on the things that are jeopardizing the spirit of fair play and the integrity of sport. I'd like to thank both Gunter Younger and Mr. Pound for joining us today, and I'd also like to thank you for tuning in. Next week, we wrap up our series, Sport Under Fire, with a very important conversation. You don't usually associate human rights with sport, but we'd better. We are joined by Minky Warden, the Director of Global Initiatives for the Human Rights Watch. What is going on behind the scenes in global sport? It's almost as alarming as a state-run doping program. And we'll also try to connect with former mafia crime boss Michael Franzese. We'll talk to Michael about the interest organized crime has in sport, how they infiltrate, control it, and use it to their benefit, and how he's now talking to professional and student athletes, as well as troubled youth, about the dangers of the dark side of sport. That's coming up next week as we wrap up our special series, Sport Under Fire. We'll talk to you then.
Goodbye now. Don't forget to write.
This is an In the Trenches with Ian Beckles. Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
Minnesota against Jacksonville is the unsexiest Super Bowl ever. Like, I can't think of a matchup that would be less sexy than Minnesota against Jacksonville, because I don't know anybody that hates Minnesota, because there's no reason to hate Minnesota. And I don't know anybody that hates Jacksonville, other than if when you're visiting there because it stinks. But other than that, nobody hates the Jacksonville Jaguars. They don't have, you know, enough history, and they haven't done enough for anybody to hate them. The two most hated teams in the NFL are Philadelphia and New England. They both have fantastic fan bases that will travel. If you're an Eagle fan, you can't be anybody else's fan. That's just the way it goes. And if you're a Patriot fan, you can't have a second team. Like, I've heard people say, I'm a Buccaneer and a Kansas City Chiefs fan. I'm like, whatever. If you're an Eagles fan, you can't have another team. They'll stab you in Philadelphia. They won't mess around with that. Those teams, if you're not an Eagle fan, you're not allowed to like them. That's the rule. You're not allowed to. They're not likable if you're not an Eagle fan. They're not trying to be likable. They don't want you to like them. That's a fact. And if you're not a Patriots fan, you're not allowed to like them either, because they're too good. And their fans can be a little obnoxious sometimes, too.
In the Trenches with Ian Beckles can be found on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.